You good?
Yeah.
Have you done a podcast before?
I have. I used to host a podcast.
Oh, yeah, you did host a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened to your podcast?
It was a theater podcast. I couldn't do it anymore.
It was a New York theater podcast.
It was called Off and On a New York Theater Podcast. I loved it. It was like, I loved doing it. I did it for 3 years.
Yeah.
I got to interview a lot of people I really admire. Yeah. It was wonderful, but you'll never make any money that way doing a theater podcast, especially a New York off-Broadway theater podcast.
Yeah.
And the whole point of my podcast was to interview people who hadn't made it yet.
Right.
But that means that not that many people care.
Yeah, nobody gets
it. So it's funny because the people who listen to it love my podcast, but I don't know how what your experience has been, but I got to a point where I was getting about 10,000 downloads an episode.
That's pretty good.
And then, which was great.
Yeah.
But it never grew. And then it was just like, I just knew that's how many people are going to listen to it.
Yep.
And to make money, you have to get to 20,000. That's what it used to be. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I just had a baby.
Yeah.
No, and it was so much time. Well,
Yeah, now podcasts. You don't even live in New York.
So no. And that was another thing. I moved here. And so it was like, people were like, well who are you going to interview? And I would do Skype interviews, and those sucked.
No, those you can't do that.
They're terrible, right?
Well, you got to see people.
Yeah.
Or there's the late. Anyway, yeah, that doesn't work.
I hated it, man. I hated those.
So
Skype
fuck
interviews.
Those podcasts.
Yeah, fuck those podcasts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. My guest this week is actor, writer, and lover of guacamole, Bernardo Cubría, here to talk about his play, The Giant Void in My Soul, happening this May-June 2018 at the Pico Playhouse in Los Angeles.
Yes. Right?
That's all accurate.
Yeah, that's all accurate.
So far,
produced
so
by Ammo Theater Company.
Produced by Ammo Theater. We're going to give him a shout out. We'll chat about that and more in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. My guest today is actor, writer, Bernardo Cubría.
Yes.
I got your name right, even
you
though
got
I
it
fucked
right.
up the other stuff.
Writer's heart.
Buenas, Bernardo.
Gracias. ¿Tú hablas español?
Not really.
No, okay.
No. But, you know, you're here in California, and you should know
it's
how to
helpful.
Say something.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a bell. That's for you.
Okay.
Anytime you want to ring the bell. Oh, also, I brought you a clown nose.
Oh, I would love to wear a clown nose. Oh,
it's
my goodness.
It's all brand new.
The company is called Funny Fashion.
Well, brand new. It's
Are you
going to
wear one too?
Yeah, but I have my own that I carry in my bag for emergency
Yeah,
purposes.
Just in case a clown is needed.
You always need a clown nose and a squeaky toy.
Yes.
I got it in my bag.
Something that beeps?
All the time. Well, it's like a dog squeaky toy.
Yeah, yeah. I like it.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to wear mine. So all the people on the radio will see that we have clown noses.
Yes, they will love it.
Yeah. I went to Cuba last year for the first time because now you can go to Cuba.
Yeah.
And, I brought like a dozen clown noses and I handed them out to kids and stuff. I mean,
how cool.
It's awesome.
So you're a clown?
No.
No.
That question
is
a fucked up question.
It is a fucked up question.
Why do you think it's fucked up?
Because I think that...
So you're a clown? Are you a clown now? Yeah.
Well, because I think that when you say clown nowadays, people think scary like it.
Yeah.
Like Pennywise.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sound like a total pretentious theater person and everybody will stop listening. But when I think clown, like I think of like my heroes. Like I think like Jim Carrey's a clown. I think Abbott and Costello are clowns.
Yeah.
I think
the
clown
Stooges.
Is funny. The Three Stooges. Yeah. Yeah. Like I love that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what I study.
Yeah, we're going to get into the thing that there's a theater clown and there's a circus clown.
Yes.
And they're not the same thing.
No.
And, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I think it's weird because I have a clown teacher. I've done some time in the clown program, you know, like 40 hours a week for 6 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And then when you come out, people look at you and they say, you're a clown now?
Yeah.
Like, whatever they knew about you before, anything that you might have, it's completely erased. And what goes right in the front of the line is, you're a clown.
Yeah.
And somehow the identification of being a clown is so strong for people.
Yes.
That they think I quit my job. And like, what do you fucking think that means?
But don't you think that also has to do with the fact that people look down on comedy? It's funny, like, no matter, people love comedy. People love laughing, right?
Yeah.
But if you're the clown,
yeah.
I mean, that bit in Goodfellas, right? Like, what am I, a clown? If I make you laugh? That guy is so pissed. Yeah. Joe Pesci's character is so pissed that someone would think of him as a clown. But all that guy is saying is, hey, man, you're funny.
Right.
Which is, like, I think the greatest compliment in the world. But people, that's how mad Joe Pesci gets that he fucking kills that guy.
He does kill. Well, that's Joe Pesci. All right, let's start the show.
Okay,
and then because we're going to get more into this thing.
Great.
Yeah. Okay. So first and foremost, you know, what's up with this play, The Giant Void in My Soul?
Well, so this is...
Doesn't sound like you're Catholic.
I am a recovering Catholic. You're 100% right. And if you watch the play, that is very clear.
It is, yeah.
So, yeah, this was a play that I started writing about 8 months ago because I was realizing that I never felt fulfilled or happy and nothing was ever enough for me. And no matter what happened in my life, a marriage or a gig that one would think would make everything better and solve all the issues.
You mean like that thing where you say, if only I could dot, yes. dot, dot, then everything is going to be okay.
Yes. And never, especially, I think, work. In our careers.
Never happened.
You do that a lot. You go,
everybody.
Oh, man, if I just get that guest star or
everybody.
If I just buy that house. And so I thought, well, maybe we just all have a giant void in our soul. And I wanted to make fun of it. And explore it.
Because that's the most painful thing you can think of.
Yeah. And okay. So that's what this play is.
Uh-huh.
It's about this character who's a clown.
Yeah.
We'll get into that word. But
yeah.
Fool 1 discovers they have a giant void in their soul, and their best friend in the whole world, Fool 2, goes on a journey with them to try to fill it. And so they try drugs and alcohol. They try getting married. They try having a baby. And, you know, hilarity ensues.
Don't tell us.
That's it.
Don't
that's all I'll say.
Spoiler. Don't tell us.
Hilarity ensues.
All right. Don't tell us what happens at the end. Because,
yes.
You know, then people will not
come to the play.
Now, you mentioned a couple of things. You said this character is a clown.
Yes.
And then, but there you've entitled them Fool 1, Fool 2.
Yes.
What's the difference? Is there a difference between a clown and a fool? Or what? You're throwing this lingo around awfully fast.
I am. I'm very sorry about that. So I think that there is. And that I could get into the sort of, but for me, what a fool is, uh-huh. is fool places it kind of like where the inspiration for it is for me, which is sort of like an old school theater character, which is like in King Lear, the fool, that's the
yes.
name of the character,
yes.
is my favorite
yes.
character ever in Shakespeare.
Yep.
And he is supposedly the dumb one, supposedly the funny one, but he's the only one who keeps it real with King Lear throughout that play.
He's the one who can tell him your pants are down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because he's the funny guy, nobody takes him seriously, and King Lear doesn't have his head chopped off.
Well, that's a historically accurate role for the jester.
Yes.
In that time period, right? The jester, the fool, was the dumb one, the stupid one. They were retarded. They were subhuman.
Yes.
But that gave them the permission to say things to the king that no one else could say. And the king needed that guy.
Yeah.
Because without him, the tension of the people would build up and they would chop the king's head off. So the fool, the idiot, comes in and can say things,
yeah.
relieves the tension, everyone gets to laugh at the king, and everyone goes on. It's how the king keeps his power, is by having the fool around to knock him down a peg and let the air out of his balloon.
Yeah, and I love that person. In my life, I've always been attracted to that person. The person who, like, this is such a random story to tell, but I remember there was a guy in my high school, JP, if he's listening.
JP?
This guy was hilarious.
Okay.
He was very funny, and he was the fool of our high school. And I remember when the student council elections happened, he ran for president. And he got on stage, and he did basically, like, this performance art piece about how all of this was bullshit. And like, why do we care? Why are we promising vending machines? And he did this thing and the whole room was in silence.
Uh-huh.
And he basically stood on stage and in a funny way said to everyone in high school, this is all an illusion. It's a crap. What are we doing?
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there covered in goosebumps and I was like, I love him.
I'm going to vote for this motherfucker.
Yeah, and I did. But I was like, that's the guy.
Did he win?
No, but he didn't care. And I also love that because I so deeply care about people liking me and about belonging that I love that maybe he did care. But in that moment on stage, I believe that JP didn't care about any of that.
Yeah.
He just wanted us to know this whole little world that you're living in, it's a lie.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, do we know where JP is now?
He does theater in San Francisco, like experimental theater.
Okay.
Yeah. He's awesome. I love that guy. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, I want to meet him because I go up there every once in a while. I'll interview him.
Oh, my God.
For this podcast.
You should. That'd be so funny.
No,
you're like,
three
this
guests
is how it happened.
From San Francisco.
Oh, really?
I interviewed in the last year.
They got great
friends
theater
of mine
there, man.
From the theater.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Now, so this story, A Giant Void in My Soul at the Pico Playhouse. What's funny about the giant void?
Well, I think it's funny that we never feel fulfilled. It's hilarious to me.
Well, some people are going to think that's depressing.
Well, it is. Well, it is sad, but I think sad things are really funny.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. Of many things. Where to start? What does that mean?
I don't know. What do you? You said something I liked. I rang the bell.
Oh, that's what
it is. Don't look for explanations.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't look for meaning.
This is not that kind of show.
Well,
there's meaning, but you're not going to get an explanation.
Okay, great. So I think it's really funny. I have a lot of privilege in my life.
Yeah.
And the fact that I sometimes sit in my nice apartment with my beautiful wife and my baby, and I sit up at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm feeling all down about my life, is hilarious. Like, who am I? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because I want X or Y or whatever, I don't know what it is. I think there's something really funny about that.
Yeah.
And it is also sad. And we all know that feeling of feeling not good enough and not liking ourselves and wanting to like ourselves. So that's what what it's about.
So they're sad. These creatures, these
fools.
Well,
Fool One is sad. Because Fool One is the friend who thinks about themselves, is inside.
Uh-huh.
And Fool Two is the loyal best friend. And that, for me, is... This play is sort of an homage to my favorite. I love Horatio. I love Sancho Panza. I've always, since I was a kid, I remember watching Man of La Mancha in Mexico City. Broadway of Mexico City.
Yes,
and I was watching that musical with my mom. And the whole time, instead of watching Don Quixote, I was like, who's this funny fat guy who follows Don Quixote? He's like, oh, those are windmills. And he's like, cool, bro, they're windmills, even though he knows they're not windmills. And he thinks he's a knight. And that he's like, his life is epic in his head.
That's Don Quixote.
That's happening, my friend.
He says,
he's just like, cool. There's a moment of the play that I took from an interaction I had with my older brother once, where I was sitting with him in his house. He lives in Houston, and I love my older brother. He's like my hero. In Houston,
He grew up in Houston.
Houston, Texas. And I was sitting with him, and I asked him, I said, are you happy? And he was like, what? I was like, are you happy? And what I was asking was like this existential, heavy fucking question while we're watching the Astros or whatever. And he was like, yeah, I'm happy. And he was so, he just wanted the conversation to end. He was like, what are you even asking me? And I was like, man, it's so weird. Like, who am I that I walk around every day? And every day I'm like, am I happy? Is my wife happy? Is my baby happy? It's like, it's hard.
It is hard.
To live that way.
No, and that a lot of people don't want to deal with that. I mean, they don't think about those things because they're difficult questions. The answers are painful.
And I also think there's wisdom in not only search for, in like, if all you do is search for meaning, then what happens in your life? You know, like, I think there's, anyway, I think it's a happy medium. Yeah.
Yeah, you should have a balance. Now, I want to change this question a little bit. We started to talk a minute ago, some people are terrified of clowns.
Yes.
You know that. There's a name for it, coulrophobia. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It makes me so sad because even in the promos for our play, we have these amazing actors in our play, these four women, and they will post pictures of themselves in the makeup.
Right.
And half of the comments are from their friends, and they're like, this is terrifying. Sorry, I can't see it. I can't see this play. I can't see this play. And I want to respond to every single one of them and be like, no, it's not. It's not Pennywise. It's not what you're scared of from your
childhood. Well, some of it is from these kind of creepy clown things.
Totally.
But some of it is more than that, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, so if I get super defensive of clowns and my love of it, is that I think there's something very naked about a clown in its reflection of humanity.
Yeah.
That I think people don't want to be the clown.
Yeah.
People spend a lot of time thinking about how to not be the insecure, the sad, the hungry, the desperate, the the things that we all are. And so I think actually that's kind of an homage to this amazing theatrical tradition, is that people see it and they get scared.
Yeah. But now I think you're on to the truth, right?
Yeah.
I've boiled it down basically to three things.
Okay.
This is my opinion. Number one, clowns suck.
Yeah.
Right? They're all the things you said.
Yeah.
They're vain, they're stupid, they're clumsy, they're overly proud, and they stink.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So clowns suck. But at the same time, number two is that they're totally enthusiastic.
Yeah.
No matter how bad they are at stuff, they are happy as hell to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And number three, they're indestructible.
Yeah.
Right? You can smash them, beat them, run them over, drop them from tall buildings. They keep going.
Yeah.
So when you get when you get like they're fallible,
yeah,
they're cheerful, and they're indestructible.
Yeah.
That is a scary motherfucker. Yeah. Like, you do not want that thing in your pants.
No. Yeah, not at all. No, yeah.
So I think that's it. And people, you know, you're right. We spend a lot of time being the smart one, being the one that the people that get it right.
The sexy one.
And clowns get everything wrong.
Yeah, and the clown is always, it's always clear to the audience if it's a great clown. Like, one of my favorite clowns is this guy named Jeff Johnson, who's from Houston, but he has done Cirque du Soleil, and he's this amazing guy. And like, every time he stands on stage, you know you're laughing. Like, even when it gets really dark, there's something about it that goes, ah, what are you doing? You know, like, your brain does that.
Yeah.
I love him.
Now, you grew up in Houston.
Yes.
Your family's from Mexico.
Yes.
Is there some different cultural cue about clowns and clowning in Mexico or versus the United States?
I think that has a lot to do with my love of it.
Yeah.
So I was born in Mexico, but I moved when I was two. But, you know, I grew up in a Mexican home. Yeah. My parents spoke in Spanish. We spoke in Spanish. And there's a lot of Mexican television on.
Uh-huh.
And El Chavo del Ocho, that some people know or don't, but it's this Mexican show that has been on forever. It still is on primetime television all throughout Latin America, and it's reruns.
Okay,
but it gets like a primetime slot, and it gets high ratings, and it's been on for 30 years. And when you watch the acting, it's all clowning.
Yeah.
It's these adults dressed as children, and they're poor children, and they live in this sort of apartment complex with these angry parents. It's all commedia dell'arte, you know? Yeah. It's all slapstick. They hit each other. They pull each other's ears, and it's brilliant. It's so funny. And I think I just like that kind of comedy, you know?
There's nothing funny about that. They're poor kids.
Yeah.
They have horrible parents who abuse them.
One kid lives in a trash can. That's the main character. This is true. He's El Chavo del Ocho, apartment 8, is a trash can in the middle of this complex. This kid lives in there.
Yeah.
And there's never like the long scene about why did he end up in a trash can. No. It's just like that kid is as destitute as you can get.
Right.
And he's your favorite person.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. So we have that all the time. Yeah. Now you have another show called Judgment of Fools.
Yes.
Yeah. What is that? It's a previous to this.
Yes. So this was a play I did about 3 years ago. It got done in New York, L.A., and Houston.
Uh-huh.
And it was a clown show also, but it was interactive.
Okay.
And that, so if you think clowns scare people, tell people audience participation, that really scares people.
You shouldn't tell them that in the marketing.
I know, but then if you don't, people, we tried that. When we first started in New York, and people got really mad at me, like dear friends of mine were like, "Fuck you, man!" That's sorry, great. Can I curse them?
Yeah,
they'd be like, "Screw you, man! I can't believe that they called on me," and it was all about racism and classism and sort of social things. But the fools would play the fools to get people to say their truths, and I loved it. I loved that play. But that was a play that, because it was all about audience participation, I saw it on nights where, I know it sounds weird me saying this, but I thought it was brilliant.
Uh-huh.
And then if you get 40 people who don't want to talk,
right,
and no matter how much alcohol you give them, they're not willing to be honest.
It's brutal.
It's the worst play you've ever seen in your entire life. I watched a production with my parents and a bunch of their friends in Houston. That was the worst night of theater I've ever been to, and I wrote it. Because right. Wow. They didn't want to participate.
Well, but there's a lot of participation, improvisation, and the people have to work. The cast has to work to get people to play along.
Totally. Yeah. And once the cast is desperately working for the audience to participate, then it's all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. My father-in-law, he spends New Year's at a meditation center in San Francisco where you go and you sit in silence for 4 hours. And then at the end of the night, people go to this fire and they throw things into the fire that they want to burn from last year and go into the new year.
Yes.
And one of the funniest, saddest things, I think that line is very tight, that I saw once was I was there with my wife and my father-in-law. And, you know, after 4 hours of meditation, and we're sitting out there and this woman has a suitcase. And you're like, man, your last year sucked. Like, you are fire. This woman hated this
like
last year of her life.
Barrel.
I'm not kidding. She might as well have had a wheelbarrow. And she's pulling everything. And then the last thing she pulled out and threw into the fire was a copy of The Vagina Monologues. And it just made me laugh so much.
Yeah. I just, there was something so tragic to me about the fact that one of the things that had destroyed her the year before was, in my head, I made it up because I'm an actor and I put my own shit on it. Yeah. I was like, she was in some crappy production of The Vagina Monologues. And she was just like, I just have to get rid of this. I can never have that. Anyway, that story made
me
think
she had
of
a hysterectomy.
Oh.
And she couldn't actually, you know, like actually, throw her uterus in the thing.
You know what? I shouldn't be making fun of this. This is very serious.
No, we can make fun of anything we want. Come on. That's what this show is about. Okay, here's another question. What do you have against mango salsa?
Oh, it's the worst.
What's wrong with mango?
It's so gringo. I'm sorry, guys. I love this country. It's done a lot for me. Okay,
I understand.
And we have given a lot to America. Mexican food, I think, is top three for any person you meet.
Mostly.
Mango salsa is a bastardization of everything that is Mexican food. You will never go to Mexico and find mango salsa. It's
you have mangoes there. You have
we
salsa.
Have mangoes.
Why not combine them?
And this is how horrible of an idea it is.
Yeah.
In Mexico, people have had salsa for eons.
Yes.
And they've had mangoes, delicious mangoes, by the way, in Mexico, great mangoes. Much better than here, for eons. Yeah. And not once did, you know, Cuauhtémoc, the Aztec, say, let's mix these two things. Because we had the wisdom to understand, you're ruining the salsa and you're ruining the mango by putting them together. Are you pro or anti?
I don't really have an opinion. Yeah. But, first, I mean.
But don't you think that's what makes Mexican food so great? Is it actually is very simple. Like, I get very upset. My wife makes fun of me, but I get very upset if we go to a Mexican restaurant. It's like $30 for tacos. If it's a fancy place, I get so mad. I'm like, Mexican food costs like $2 to make. That's what makes it so great, you
that's
know?
It's good.
Yeah. So I'd much rather go to the taco cart than like,
a fancy Mexican place.
Like Rosa Mexicana or something. I don't like that.
Sense. Yeah. Now, how old were you when you first ran away from home?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh. I think I tried to run away once when I was like 6.
Yeah.
I remember we had this little suitcase that was like blue and orange. It was like a kid's suitcase. It was clearly like made for a child to have a suitcase. And I remember packing it and walking all the way to the end of my street and then walking back.
You remember what you thought when you got to the end?
I can't do this. Okay, I'm a very fearful person, and that was probably the beginning of that.
Yeah.
Like, I surf, but I mostly surf because I'm bad at it, and the moment where you have to jump up onto the board, because if not, the wave will crash on you, you have to be very brave for a second and go, I don't care, and jump on the board. And for me, that decision to jump on it is so difficult that I actually like surfing because it's like it makes me do it over and over again.
Makes you do that one moment.
Yeah.
You don't really care about the wave or anything.
No, I don't care about any of that.
You just care about
this exercise.
Where you're going to poop your pants, but you do it anyway.
Yes. Or I don't, and then I poop my pants.
And then you get you get crushed.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you remember why you decided you wanted to run away?
I'm sure it was an argument with one of my brothers or my father.
All right.
A lot of male energy in my house.
A lot of male energy. Okay. When you were a child, you had an imaginary friend.
I don't remember having an imaginary friend, but I did for a long time think that I really believe this. I remember this pretty distinctly, that I thought I was from another planet and I had been sent to the world for a reason. I think it has to do with growing up Catholic, but I was very convinced that I was like a robot or like a alien. And that I was not like everyone else, and I had to discover something.
Is this in college, or when was this?
Yeah, this was yesterday. What I'm saying to you is that's who I am.
Yeah. How old
were you? I think probably like 6, 7.
Okay.
This is, you know, you make up memories in your head, but I do remember one time, I don't know why, I have this memory of me really dealing with this existentially in my head, and I was in a parking lot at a supermarket, at a Kroger.
Okay.
You know what a Kroger is?
Yeah. Okay. Do I know what a Kroger is?
Come on. I don't know.
The host of the show. I'm omniscient.
Yes, you know all the things.
So you were 6 or 7, and you were convinced that you were either an alien or a robot.
Yeah, something like that.
Sent to our planet, and that you
to
had,
do something.
You had to discover, though, what your task was.
Yeah, but I remember caring, and I remember not wanting to get found out. Yeah. And I remember also it felt scary that I wasn't like other people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's weird. I've talked about this in therapy. I don't really know, but that definitely was a real thought that I had.
Yeah. I'm watching your face.
Yeah.
You still have a little bit, a sense of that. The feeling you can pull.
Well, I think it's probably one of the reasons that a lot of us become actors and stuff. It's like we think that we're like special in some way. I don't know. There's something about that feeling, which is honest for me, that I also judge very heavily.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that, yeah.
Yeah, and I go, oh, God, what a narcissist, this guy. He thinks he's special. But about myself, you know, like, yeah.
People, you know, again, about the clown training.
Yeah.
I got a signal from somewhere at some moment that I needed to figure out some clown stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't say, oh, I got to do it. I said some. And so this guy came to San Francisco. I was there from Italy. This is, you know, blah, blah. We do this weekend with this guy. I said, okay.
Who was it?
His name, what the hell's his name?
Was it Antonio Fava?
No, Giovanni Fusetti.
Okay, wow.
So, you know, in the beginning you go in and you don't create a creature.
Yeah.
You improvise and one comes out of you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the creature that came out of me thought that he was smarter and prettier than all the other clowns.
Oh, I love it.
And when that happened, it was like in the first 2 hours of a weekend.
Oh, God.
When that happened, I immediately recognized that that was me.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that that was me before this moment.
Yeah.
And I hated that fucker.
Oh, totally.
I was ashamed and embarrassed. I did not want to be that guy.
Yeah.
And the last thing I wanted to do for a weekend was to exaggerate that.
Yeah. Which and is fully the, accept that I am that guy.
Yeah, and to, you know, and I had the most difficult weekend of my life up till that moment.
Yeah.
And at the end of the weekend, I went up to the teacher and I said, thank you and fuck you.
Yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
And he laughed and he said, you'll be back.
Yeah.
And yeah, the next year I went and did 4 weeks with him in Boulder, Colorado. And the year after that, I did 6 weeks with him in Boulder.
Oh, cool.
Because, yeah, I, you know, that whole thing was, yeah. So this is what people think clown school is fun.
Oh, no.
And I say, absolutely not. It's brutal.
It's the worst.
Yeah, what was your experience?
So I studied, it was commedia based in Italy with this guy, Antonio Fava, who, like, his great-great-grandfather was a great commedia actor and it passed on and he makes masks and stuff. And that first week of training, I'd just gotten out of theater school in Houston and I thought I was very methody and, you know, I felt very good about myself as an actor. And I showed up and after that week, I felt completely untalented, exhausted. I hated myself. I had spent my whole life thinking I was funny, and I didn't make one person laugh for a week, and it really hurt me. Because for me, making people laugh is all I care about.
That's all you
want
to do.
I will be that guy at the dinner. Again, it's something I don't like, but it's the truth about me.
Yeah.
And it was the hardest training I'd ever done. And after the 3 months, I was like, oh, I shouldn't have gone to theater school. I should have gone to clowning school for like 2 years. It just spoke to me. It's a totally different thing. Yeah,
it's totally different.
Yeah.
But what made it so hard? Like you know, it felt bad.
Well, it's very bare. Like I think when you're doing a play, if you're learning, you know, whatever, Meisner or whatever. All of this I really respect, by the way.
Sure.
But when you're learning Meisner, you get to pretend you're somebody else.
Right.
You get to pretend that like, oh, his dad didn't like him, so da 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 da. And clowning is just like, what about you? And what do you not like about yourself?
Yeah.
And I'll be that on stage so honestly that people are laughing.
Well, you take the worst parts of you, you exaggerate them to grotesqueness.
Totally.
And that's what we're going to laugh at.
Yeah. And it's why my favorite, like, in this kind of training, I love Sacha Baron Cohen so much. I think he does it in such a brilliant way. And Borat, to me, is just one of the most brilliant clown characters ever.
Yeah.
Because he pretends to be this foreign guy, but what he is all the things that are wrong with America.
Right.
He is racist. He is anti-Semitic. He is horrible to women. He hates
materialistic,
obsessed with Pamela Anderson. That's all he cares about in that movie. It's like, it's all the things that we are as Americans, but we pretend, the audience gets to pretend that they're not that because he has this funny accent and he's from this place where most people don't even know that it's a real country.
Right?
He's from Kazakhstan.
Right.
But I love that movie because what he's saying is, no, this is you.
Yeah.
If I sing Throw the Jew Down the Well, all of you will sing along,
you
know? Yeah. And they do.
They do.
it's crazy.
Awesome. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I was just remembering one of my classes, my clown classes. You know, there's a guy who's depressed.
Yeah.
He's had a problem with depression.
Okay.
We wanted his creature to be happy all the time.
Oh,
and it was the hardest thing in the world for this guy.
I'm sure.
You know?
But I bet you when he was happy, it was beautiful.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. You know? And there's these moments when you watch your colleagues and you can tell when they're in that zone. And if they're not in it, you could tell.
Yeah.
You just know. Somehow you're like, no, man, move a little over that way or move it. You know?
It's amazing.
Yeah,
with our actors in this play,
they're, you know, for most of them, they're like, they come from normal acting training and they're brilliant actors, but this world was different, you know, and they all would say to us after rehearsal, this is the hardest show I've ever done. This is the hardest show I've ever done. But it was amazing to watch those moments where it clicked for them.
Right.
You know? And each one of them had that moment of rehearsal where Felix, the director, who's amazing, he and I were sitting there and you could see both of us go, there it is.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But like you just, you feel it when it clicks in. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to come see the show this Friday. Please.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm coming this Friday. Oh, great. We're just going to say it again. The Giant Void in My Soul opens this weekend, or just opened.
No, it opened last weekend.
Last weekend. So May 11th to June 3rd at the Pico Playhouse. 10508 West Pico Boulevard, Los Angeles, blah, blah, blah. Go check it out.
Yeah, and go to ammotheater.com and get your tickets. It's only $25. We go Fridays, Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 7 p.m. And we've gotten, I only share this because it'll make you think that maybe you should see this show. We've gotten really nice reviews this week, so please come out and check it out. Because some bloggers have enjoyed it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Now, I have a special question that I ask everybody.
Okay.
And it's a sponsored question. I have a different sponsor every week. And so, you know, and I was going to say that this week, the sponsor of this question is Petty Cash Taqueria.
Okay.
Have you been to this place?
No, where is it?
It's actually really close by, 7360 Beverly Boulevard. It's a couple blocks away.
Okay.
I got into going there because they have a sangrita.
Oh.
And a, still, I know it's Los Angeles, but you go to places and you ask, you want some tequila, they say, you have any sangrita? And they say, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And you try to explain it and they don't have any idea. Spent a lot of time, more time in Mexico than I have. What, sangrita? What is it? Tomato? Well,
someone take away my Mexican card because I don't know what a sangrita is.
You never had it?
No.
Come on.
I swear. I thought it was like a sangria margarita when you said it. I'm just being very honest. I'm sure it's a very Mexican thing, and all my parents would be very disappointed in me at this moment in the podcast.
Well, this is what's weird, because...
What is it? It's tequila.
People have said the same thing. Like, I never heard of this before, but when I have been to Mexico, this is... Okay, so here's the deal.
Yeah.
You get a shot of tequila.
Love that.
You get the sangrita, which is, you know, the little blood, and it's a small glass...
Yes, of tomato, of like clamato, yeah.
Tomato or orange, lime. Anyway, it's a mixture of tomato, orange juice, tomato, lime, something. And that is the thing you drink with the...
So
you've had that, right?
And then you take the red, which is the clamato, the red, yeah.
Got it. Okay, so maybe,
similar. Yeah, but yeah.
Anyway, somehow I figured some stuff out that... Anyway. Now, you have a somewhat quirky bedtime or sleeping ritual. What is it?
Oh, well, I cannot fall asleep without a podcast in my ear.
Really?
Yes, because my brain, I can't shut it off. And about 3 or 4 years ago, my insomnia got pretty bad. And then I discovered that if I listen to podcasts, usually about things that I like but are not that important, like sports, love sports, I can fall asleep.
All right.
And so every night I listen to the Tony Kornheiser show as I fall asleep.
All right.
It feels very nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did your wife have an opinion about this?
I keep it low enough so it doesn't mess with her. And she likes it because now I'm not tossing and turning in the bed anymore. I'm messing with her sleep.
All right. So when you're finally ready to go to sleep, you turn it on. So I was going to say, I can't imagine.
Well, it's funny.
You're gonna have sex, you do that before all this happens.
Oh, yes. No, yeah, the podcast is not part of lovemaking with my wife. So, no. Okay. She would not allow that.
No, that's... Tony Kornheiser.
Yes.
Yeah. Woody Allen has this bit... I have this LP from his stand-up material in the 60s, early 70s, 60s. And he has this bit where he says that during sex, to kind of keep himself from going too fast, he thinks about baseball.
Yes.
And so, you know, he has the whole thing and he's getting into the sex and it's getting hot and heavy and, you know, somebody's on second base and he steals third and all this stuff. And, you know, and so we have a pinch hitter. And meanwhile, the woman is in the shower.
Yeah.
That's his joke. He does it better. But, you know. Now, the last thing I like to do on this program, which you didn't get because you listened to only part of that other podcast, and I don't think I did it with her anyway, is I like to anagram things.
Great.
Anagrams is where you take the letters of a word or phrase and you completely rearrange them to spell other words or phrases.
Great.
You can't leave any out.
Okay.
And it's like an improv justification game. The question is, like, when we do this, does it shed any light on the original thing?
Like it?
So Here's the first one. I did your name, Bernardo Cubría.
Uh-huh.
Anagrams to this.
Our barbaric den. Wow.
Yeah.
It makes me sound a lot tougher than I am.
You have a man cave, perhaps, at home?
If I had the money to have a man cave, I would definitely have a sports watching room, yes. Yeah, I would definitely do that. But this, I am that guy.
Our barbaric den. Has anything come up for you?
No, but it sounds like man, like
macho.
Leg of like eat the chicken. Yeah, it feels that axe. Yeah,
axe.
Yeah,
body spray axe.
No. Yes, that was actually the first commercial I ever did
for axe.
Brown. I was the Latino cheesy guy. I sold out all of my people. I was in a really crappy axe body spray commercial. Yeah.
Well, that's all right.
There you go.
So they're going to sell out.
Hey, man.
Look, more people would sell out if they could.
Oh, so I've sold out so many times. Yeah. Yeah. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Diego appreciates it.
So Bernardo Cubría, also anagrams to this.
Caribou Brander.
Yeah.
Caribou is the bird, correct?
It's like a deer. It's a big deer.
Oh, yes.
Like a moose deer.
Yes, a bird, not at all.
Caribou Brander.
My wife
do that for a summer job, perhaps?
I was never a caribou brander. But who knows, man, if the career doesn't work out.
The comedy thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So that
caribou
that was a
dead brander.
End. Dead end.
I like it.
Dead end. All right.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but...
we're going to try a couple more.
Okay.
Let's see.
I like this.
Yeah, well, okay, so far you suck at it.
I know. I didn't even know what a caribou was. I thought it was a bird.
Yeah, all right. That's all right.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Why I'm here.
It's
all right, so I also anagrammed Giant Void in My Soul, which is the name of your play that's up in there. And here's one.
Ooh, I love this. A Dog's Violin Mutiny.
Now, what kind of image comes to your mind when you see a dog's violin mutiny?
Well, I think the one that really sticks out to me is the mutiny.
Yeah.
Sort of revolution, rebel, and these dogs starting a revolution by playing the violin. I mean, it's very funny. I really like it. It's probably a cartoon.
So you're seeing that they're actually playing the violin?
Yes, to fight the revolution.
That and
maybe they're fighting against like a librarian or something, and they've been told to be quiet, and so the dogs get together and buy some violins to lead this mutiny.
I was thinking about cats. I mean, cats can't possibly like violins, do you think?
No. Well, I don't like cats at all. I've just lost any person who's going to come to my my play.
But you don't like cats?
I'm not a cat person. Yeah. I'm allergic to them, and I don't like them.
Well, they don't like... They, didn't
they
like
don't like
first.
Me. That's how it started. And there you go. My desperate need to be liked. I can't even handle a
you
cat.
Can't. They don't know.
No, they'll never like me.
You know what I think is interesting?
Yeah.
Cats are not as smart as dogs. But...
Yes.
We humans think that cats are smarter because they don't give a shit about us.
Yes.
And I'm interested that what is up with our human mind, that the thing that is loyal to us, we think is dumb, and the thing that gives us the finger, we think is smart.
This is full circle. It's the clown thing.
And we're wrong.
We think that the loyal, nice person is... I'll say it's this stupid. Really quick thing about my grandmother had this thing about cats versus dogs. I don't know that if it's true, but it sounded really cool from my grandmother in Spanish. But she would say, when you go to Pompeii in Italy, in the remains, you will find dogs, but you won't find cats. And her view on this was that the cats and the dogs knew that something was going to happen because animals have another sense. They knew the volcano was coming, and the cats were like, screw it, I'm out of here. And the dogs were like, no, I'm going to stay here and be loyal. There you go, to your point. I don't know if this is true, but it made an impression on me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I think that's yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now your grandmother was into something. No, that's cool. All right, here's another one. Giant Void in My Soul. Anagrams to this.
Looming Ivy, a nudist. Looming Ivy, a nudist.
Yeah, what do you see there?
Like a Cinemax movie. Looming Ivy is played by, some actress.
Oh, it's a person.
Yes.
Looming Ivy.
Yeah.
Like
a nudist. This
nudist.
Is a movie about Looming Ivy, who's the person.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Her name.
Yes.
Looming Ivy, and she's a nudist.
Oh.
And we follow her on her nudist travails.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
That's possible.
Yeah.
I also saw like somebody who was new at being a nudist. And they went to the nudist camp for the first time, and they're hiding behind the bush.
The looming ivy.
They're
looming,
of like stalking.
And that's what's keeping them from being a full nudist.
Well, they, they're going to get there.
It's hard. The first day's hard.
They're going to get there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thursday. Yeah. Okay. Okay, now here's something.
Okay.
Giant void in my soul also anagrams to this.
Avoiding lousy mint.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Do you like mint?
I'm indifferent to mint. I'm not pro-mint, anti-mint.
Indifferent.
Yes, I'm indifferent to mint.
Yeah.
I will have a mint on the way out of a restaurant because it's free, but not for any other reason.
I like your high standards.
Yeah, I don't really care about mint. Like mint ice cream, you're wasting your time.
Mint chocolate chip.
Oh, what a waste of time.
I don't like chocolate and mint together.
Oh, well, no, me neither, actually.
People think I'm insane.
No, I agree with you.
Avoiding lousy mint.
Yes.
Is there anything to do with giant void in my soul?
Well, maybe avoiding the problem, which is the mint, right?
If you had a void in your soul and somebody gave you a mint.
It's not going to fill it.
Depends on how much you like mints.
Well, that's true.
All right. Giant void in my soul. Last one, anagram for that is this.
A divot's ugly minion.
Yeah. Now, what do you think that means? What are you getting image-wise?
Robert Frost.
Robert Frost.
Two rows diverged, you know? A divot, right? That's what that is, right?
A divot is like a hole.
Yeah.
Like when you're golfing and you actually hit the turf and kip up.
Oh, see, this is, again, I made another mistake. I don't know words right now for some reason, but at least I'm being honest. I thought a divot divided, did spread.
Well, it divides the grass from the ground.
From the hole. But so that's why I thought of Robert Frost. I thought divide, yes.
You got to Robert Frost.
Yeah. It's one of two poems I've read.
This one confused me because a divot, I think is the clod of earth that comes up when you are a bad golfer.
Yes.
And how could that thing have an ugly minion? Yeah. I wasn't sure.
Well, but maybe when you bring up the grass, the minion comes out from it or something.
Oh, it could be the worms.
Yes.
And things that are attached.
Yes.
The divot's ugly minion.
Yes.
You hit the thing and these worms come up and they...
And that's what the play is after. The hidden worms of the audience. I'm there to expose it. Just kidding.
You got really philosophical there for a minute.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
You lost me.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I tried.
All right, now I have one last thing to... one last thing, anagram, and I hope you're not going to be offended. I anagrammed mango salsa.
Ooh.
Yeah. And here's what it came up to see.
Samoa slang.
That could be possible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is. Oh, I'm sure there's Samoan slang.
Well, there's Samoan.
There has to be.
So
yes.
There's Samoan
of course
slang.
There's Samoan slang.
So here's the question. In Samoa,
uh-huh.
If you call somebody mango salsa,
ooh.
What do you really call?
Would they be upset?
What if it? Well, yeah, of course. Well, I don't know. That's the question. What are you calling somebody? You say, "Hey, mango salsa."
Hey, you mango salsa?
Yeah, that's the way Samoans speak.
Yeah. Our Samoan accents are really great right now. Yeah. Hey, you mango salsa. Don't cut in front of me.
Or like, "Hey, mango salsa. What's up, bro?"
Yeah.
What are you calling them?
I think it's an insult. I can't not make mango salsa. I think it's a terrible thing.
It's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, mango. Yeah. Oh, it's the worst thing you can call someone mango on the salsa. Samoan Islands. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mango salsa.
Mango
he was
salsa.
A king of the islands who was mean to his people, mango salsa. And so ever since then, after he died and the people got freedom, they turned it into a slur. King Mango Salsa, yeah.
And now it's a thing. Oh, yeah. I had another question for
you.
And you may not really want to answer this. I've asked several people. This is like the sangrita thing.
Okay.
A little different. I'm going to laugh about this. Nobody wants to tell me exactly if you call someone pinche cabrón.
Yeah.
What are you really saying about that?
Well, it's very easy. I actually, in a different play, I put a whole glossary of Mexican slang.
Because this is a bad thing to call somebody.
Oh, it's a very mean thing to say, but it can also be a really great thing.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I could be like, pinche cabrón, that was a great interview, man. Wow, what a great time we just had. Pinche literally translates to sous chef.
Sous chef.
So the chef's helper.
Yeah.
So a pinche is like, you're not even the chef, bro. You're
that was me. That was my job.
Yeah. Were you really a sous chef?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
You were a pinche.
Yeah.
So you should say that to Mexicans. They'll laugh. You should say, I was an actual pinche.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Okay?
Several times.
Yes. And then cabrón.
You're like a fucking goat's asshole.
Yeah, exactly. You fucking asshole, right? That's what it... This will let me know how you felt about my play. Really, I want you to hand and say pinche cabrón. How you felt about the play.
I would like to thank my guest, actor, writer, and lover of guacamole, Bernardo Cubría. for coming in today. Go see his play, The Giant Void in My Soul, happening right now at the Pico Playhouse in Los Angeles. You can get tickets at ammotheater.com. If you'd like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermill, and you've been listening to Actors Comedy Studios podcast called Comedy Death Star, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm Denzel Myers, your host. Thanks for listening. We will be back soon, sooner than later. You'd be surprised.